Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Beltham, and we have a very special guest with us on this episode. Zach Zadek is here. Hi, Zach.
Hi, Donald. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Zach is here because he is the creator, writer, everything of a musical called Deathless, which the studio cast recording is now out and available on one of our favorite labels, Ghostlight Records. Congratulations on the album. It's always a major accomplishment when you get a cast recording out, because it's a lot of work to get a cast recording out. And we were here to talk about the show and the cast recording, obviously. I thought we would start by giving the listeners kind of a brief synopsis of the plot, spoiler free, obviously, because there are definitely some spoilers. I kind of know the plot now that I have read up on the show and read up on you. But we want to give a spoiler free synopsis as well as a rundown of who the characters are, so people have an idea of what the show is about.
Totally. I'm happy to. Deathless takes place in it's a bit of a high concept world, where this pill has just been released in America that you could take that would sort of prevent natural death and aging. So everybody in America, when the show begins, gets one of these. We follow one family, who's on this road trip from Kansas City to Niagara Falls. And along the way, they're deciding whether they want to take this pill and live forever or not, because unfortunately, the mom of this family passed away just a few months, before being able to take this pill herself. So the family's on this road trip to make this decision, for themselves.
Right. And it's basically the daughter, right? Yeah. You've got the daughter Haley and her father Kevin, and they are joined on the road trip by her friend Justin. And along the way, they stop at the older sister Sam. But it's interesting because you've got this kind of talk about the kind of the influences behind the story, because that's kind of an interesting back, because it's structured a little bit differently. I'm not going to give away anything by saying that it's not one single road trip that we're watching. It's two parallel road trips happening at the same time that we're watching, right?
That's exactly right. Well, you did such a great job, Donald, of our main characters. We have Haley, who's our main character. She's sort of our way into the story. Her dad, Kevin, her best friend, Justin, who's sort of along for the ride. They do stop at Sam's house, her sister. But then, yes, there's this fifth character of Michelle, Haley's mom, who I mentioned has passed away when the show begins. But the show is a bit of a memory play, mm-hmm. in the sense that we're following these two road trips actually concurrently. So, you know, I don't know how many road trips you go on, but for me, when you stop along the way, you know, it's the geography that sort of triggers specific memories for a trip that you've taken multiple times. So for Haley and her family, when they stop at different places along the way to Niagara Falls, she's remembering the trip they took 1 year prior to the events of the show, when her mom was still alive and this pill had not yet been released in America. So we sort of get to know Michelle through Haley's memory of this trip as we go.
There won't be funerals, at least not anymore. And Lord knows that Mom would never have wanted one before. There was family, you and Mom and me, crisscrossing state lines, I-64 across the country. I know the wounds are raw, you're in a rush to heal. But don't you think we need a trip to let us try to feel to Niagara? Of someplace better if you had to die than Niagara. You'll see just the rushing falls and fainter sounds of memories. Let's go. I'm being serious, no moping anymore. The Subaru with suitcases, just like things were before. We're here for this, it's what we have to do. You know Mom would never leave a note unless she wanted to. One last time, one last time, one last time. Don't you remember Niagara? feet, man, there's nothing wrong. Let's go. Maybe we'll try.
That's kind of what I meant when there's like a dual thing going on, because we do kind of flash back to the previous year's road trip to get a sense of who the mom was, which is a real good approach. So what kind of inspired you to, where did the idea come from? What inspired you to write this particular show, especially because it's such an interesting concept?
Oh, thanks. You know, I'm somebody who's always sort of thought about the big questions of life. I think as many folks do, you know, what do we do in the time that we have here? Sort of an awareness that our time on Earth is limited, and how we spend it and who we spend it with is sort of a limited resource, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at like different sort of benchmark moments in my life, I become very aware of this and sort of get very panicky about it. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm never going to be this age again. I'm never going to be this age again. I'm never going to do this thing again. And I sort of started pulling on that thread of being like, well, okay, hold on. Let's say hypothetically that that wasn't the case. Let's say hypothetically that you had the option to change those parameters and live with the potential to live forever. You know, how would that affect my life? How would that affect the lives of my loved ones? How would that affect society, the fabric of it, right? And sort of pulling on that thread led to the world of Deathless. But in general, I tend to be drawn to stories that are really intimate character portraits, but sort of painted against the backdrop of a larger world or a larger mythology that's going on. Those are the kinds of stories that I get really excited by. So it started from being of this curiosity of the world of the pill, of this, you know, sort of high concept. But finding through the lens of this particular family and through the lens of grief and loss, you know, I think one of the questions that the show and the album is interested in is, well, do those things go away in a world where you could potentially live forever, or does it just sort of change the perspective that we have on them? So it's a very personal one for me, and it's been cathartic for me to sort of work through some of these thoughts and ideas through the process of making it.
It's the ideal way, and I think a lot of like really brilliant storytellers have discovered this as well, which is when you want to deal with kind of these big themes, it's oftentimes the best way to bring the audience in is through an intimate story. And here you've got a very intimate family setting where you're dealing with what seem like kind of simple questions about, because they're dealing with the loss of the mother, they're dealing with you know, the grief, but they're also dealing with these bigger issues of immortality, which is a big issue, obviously, for them. But it's through, you're seeing it through the lens of everyday people that the audience can relate to. And it is an interesting concept because it does make you think, as you said, it makes you think about your time and the limited time you have. And do you really want to be immortal? Because I think it especially in some of the songs, which you'll be hearing some of the songs throughout this interview, but in some of the songs, you kind of hear them kind of pondering the concept of being around forever and what they'll do and all the things they'll get to do and traveling the world and nonstop traveling the world. And in the way you kind of listen to it and you kind of go, but if you're immortal, then there's no sense of urgency to get things done. There's no sense of you don't have a life checklist of things. You know what I mean? You don't have a bucket list because ultimately life is becomes sort of endlessly boring. And I mean, endlessly, literally endlessly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It's funny, like one of the things that comes up in a few of the lyrics is so much of our language, even hearing you talk about it, right, is like framed just by a natural understanding that forever isn't a possibility for us, right? We say all the time, you know, oh, I've been doing this forever. We say, oh, we'll do this endlessly, as you just said, mm-hmm. right? And like those words take on a completely different contextual meaning when the possibility of forever becomes a real one. So it was fun to sort of like play with the language in that way too. But to your point about sort of meaning and perspective of how that gets framed by the pill, you know, there's been a lot of narrative media, a lot of stories about immortality sort of through a magical context, right? Mm-hmm. There's things like Tuck Everlasting. I mean, Harry Potter flirts with the idea of immortality. You know, there's so many stories about this notion. It's so core to the human condition, right? But I was really interested in exploring sort of like the grounded version of what that could look like, because in the world of our show, you know, it's not a magic pill. It's an incredible medical advancement. It's something that would extend your life potentially indefinitely, but you're not a superhero. And one of our tracks sort of starts with the idea that somebody accidentally died because they thought they were immortal. So it's interesting to like, to tie sort of this giant grand concept of like, okay, what would it be like to live forever with sort of the very practical nature of what it would look like if you could take a pill and extend your life.
I spent a decade on the beach. There's always something there to do. Live by coastal, spend a few years on each other's shores. You could come too if you're down to scuba dive. I'll be an expert in my field, scuba first, then a cooking show that I shall host. Sushi burgers made of chocolate-covered caviar, then at my peak I'll leave it all behind. When I get tired of all the running back and forth between y'all, I'll take a century off to rest my mind. And on we go, on we go. So many things we don't know. Yeah, on we go. In a 100 years run for president. You laugh, but I absolutely plan to. Arctic Monkeys will have several dozen albums out.
Thank the Lord and hope that they're much better than the last two.
You'll be running some big magazine.
After or before you've been arrested for public nudity, I'll come bail you out and we can smoke a joint or two.
We'll be placed till 3092.
Really, stop.
We can just drive around not worrying about schoolwork or job. Then we'll both be free.
And on we go.
On we go.
On we go.
On we go.
Plenty of time to go slow.
Plenty of time to go slow.
So on we go.
On we go.
no more to see.
I can't imagine how long that would be. So on we go, on we go. Sure, we might never know, but on we go, on we go.
As you just said, you're not indestructible. In other words, you can still die in a car accident, or you can still die that way. You just can't, you just aren't going to die from old age or from a medical condition.
Correct.
So that becomes kind of key. It's actually kind of key to the plot too, because you kind of get, I'm going to put this without trying to give it, I'm going to say this without a spoiler, but you kind of become, if I'm correct, if I have a good understanding of the world you've created, taking the pill sort of freezes you in the moment in terms of your current health condition is the way you will remain for the rest of forever. I was going to say the rest of your life, but it's forever.
Exactly.
Basically.
It's having this conversation, but yes, exactly right.
But you're going to maintain, you're going to be basically in the exact same health condition. So if you have some sort of chronic health condition, you're still going to have that chronic health condition, but you'll just have it forever.
That's exactly right. Yeah. The rest of you where you are.
Yeah, it doesn't cure you. It just maintains you.
That's exactly right.
Permanently maintains you the way you are. And that sort of becomes, that's an issue also. So it brings up a lot of complex things, but still on an intimate scale, because you've got this family dealing with it. And they're dealing with the grief of losing the mother just by the quirk of timing, because she dies just a couple of months before the pill becomes available.
That's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's interesting. There's so many like permutations of how this would ripple through the world. Mm-hmm. And the show and the album by that measure, like we don't have time to deal with all of them.
Of course, right.
But one of the things that I, you know, thought about is like, you know, would you become more risk averse if you took the pill and you're like, oh, I don't even want to get in a car, because why would I risk potentially getting in a car accident if I could just stay in my house all day and keep living? So it's like, what are these little trickles? How does it affect our behavior in so many ways that we don't even think about the level of risk that we're willing to assume on a day-to-day basis?
Right. And I mean, I guess if you were a smoker, you wouldn't have to give up smoking. Yeah. I guess you could like not worry about your diet. You wouldn't have to, there's a lot of things you wouldn't have to think about anymore. But it's just as an interesting concept that you kind of are tackling. So talk about, just to change tracks a little bit here, talk about the history of the show, because you've been working at, like a lot of musicals, this gestation period for the show has been quite lengthy. I mean, I know you were working on this when you were a student at NYU. So, talk about the length of time and how long this show has been in development.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. Musicals take a very long time in all their different iterations and stages of becoming. I did start working on this at the very end of my time at NYU and wrote some of the songs that are on the album while I was in school. Shortly after that, the show sort of had a bunch of different small development opportunities at different theaters around the country, which really helped shape what the earliest ideas of the show would become. A great theater called Theater Works Silicon Valley.
I've been there. I have actually been there. Yes.
Oh, the best.
More than once. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. The regional theaters that are around are so pivotal to supporting new work. And I felt very, very grateful that they believed in this idea quite early. So after doing a bunch of different residency opportunities, we had a developmental production at Goodspeed, where Annie started, All Shook Up, a bunch of amazing musicals have started at Goodspeed in Connecticut. And then the pandemic happened.
Right.
And that definitely changed sort of the trajectory of the show for a minute. But it was actually during the midst of the pandemic that we had the idea that, well, what if we actually made an album as our next step for the show? And fast forward as time does, and now it's here, and the pandemic feels like it was a long time ago already. And the album is out in the world. But, you know, it's been almost, you know, almost 8 years of Deathless so far. And it's crazy that the album is finally something that people can go listen to, because we've been working on it for a minute.
Yeah. Talk about, let's just to rewind a little bit, talk about the Goodspeed production, because that was the first production of the show. Yeah. And I know it was directed by a very wonderful director, Tina Landau. Talk about collaborating with Tina and what she was able to bring to you working with her in terms of forming the show and just revising the show and kind of her feedback and getting this in shape, basically.
Absolutely.
Because she's a brilliant director. She just is.
No, Tina's phenomenal. I felt very, very grateful and in very good hands that first production was with Tina. And also mm-hmm. very grateful that, you know, that was my first production as a musical theater writer of anything. And getting who's got such an accomplished history was really wonderful. You know, when you're writing I don't always write book music and lyrics by myself, but for Deathless, I did write the book music and lyrics. So the dynamic of collaboration with the director becomes the central collaboration in the process, because it's the director, beyond just bringing it to its feet on stage for the audience, is also sort of the sounding board as we're sort of honing and shaping the text and shaping what the show wants to be. So Tina was, you know, really in the trenches with me of figuring out, okay, is this plot point functioning as we want it to? Are we balancing the various characters appropriately? You know, she was a real deeply in the trenches with me. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to the phases of actually beginning to hone the production for that initial run at Goodspeed, you know, Tina was one of the founders of a method called Viewpoints, which she wrote a book on, actually, that's taught in sort of theaters all around the country and all around the world. And watching her get to apply her own method of viewpointing to my text was thrilling. I mean, it's the kind of thing that a writer, you know, dreams of getting to see someone apply their craft and her amazing artistry to the text of the show. So it was a really beautiful collaborative experience, and I just think the world of Tina.
Yeah, and people tend to forget they know that she's a director, but they tend to forget that she also writes. Which I think is immensely helpful. I mean, she was part of the writing creative team, development team Behind Floyd Collins.
She wrote the book to Floyd Collins.
Yeah. And people forget about that. They're sort of like, you know, they know her directing work, but they don't realize that, they forget that she also has written things.
Back when I first got sick, they made me sleep alone. Some ancient wisdom I take everywhere, be it a hospital or a dorm room on the square. No matter where you choose to go, somehow you make it feel like home.
Oh.
let's talk about the cast recording now, because that's the main thing that we're excited about, because the studio cast recording is out. And one of the tricky parts about a studio cast recording is that it's a cast recording for a show that hasn't been produced much and has not been seen by a lot of people. So it's difficult because you've got to convey the characters and the story effectively to listeners on a recording. So talk about how you kind of approach that and dealt with that on this, because it's always tricky when you do a studio cast recording for a show that hasn't really had major productions, where you've really got to get things across to your listeners. And my listeners on the show get sick of hearing me say this, but I say it all the time, which is whenever you get a new cast recording, and I even say it about vocalist recordings, as I always say, as soon as you get this album, you need to dedicate the time to sit down and listen to the album from beginning to end in one sitting, because it is really all about the story. It's all about the journey, the adventure, the whatever the creators of the show, they're taking you somewhere. They're taking you, you need to immerse yourself in this kind of oral universe that you're going into. And the only way to do that is to dedicate the time to sit down and listen to it from beginning to end.
And well, listeners are very lucky that they have you in their ear giving them that insight, because of course you're absolutely right. That's the joy and the beauty of a cast recording, and honestly, any LP that's sort of structured to be an album, right? So much music now exists to be singles or exists to just live as a 3-minute experience. And that's great. And when that's the case, but for long form works like musical theater or opera or classical works, you know, the journey is listening to it straight through. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So what was your approach in terms of putting the album together, in terms of trying to make it work as a studio album that's really trying to convey to the listeners the story? Because it's not easy, you know, to make a studio album that really works.
Yeah, well, I mean, to your point, so many cast recordings, most cast recordings are capturing a specific production of the show, right? You see the original Broadway cast recording, the original West End cast recording of something. And that's its own sort of class of cast recording, of album. You're taking a show, you're taking the actors on their off day. It's usually a Monday. You're bringing them into the studio. You're laying down exactly what happens in the theater 8 times a week. And the idea of those albums is to just truly do that, right? You're capturing what's happening in that production on that stage, sort of for eternity. It happened again, right? For eternity, for forever.
Right.
And to your point, that's not the case with this album. You know, the idea of a studio recording is that we're not capturing one particular production. This is its own artifact of the show that exists separate from any past or future production. And so instead of trying to like fake or do what you would do for a Broadway cast recording, in the studio, that we decided, no, we're going to totally take a different approach. This is its own album, that the studio is the core to this experience of this record. Mm-hmm. And I grew up loving so many studio recordings where that's the case, right? The Jesus Christ Superstar album, it existed as an album. The original Aida album, Randy Newman's Faust, the Chess. I mean, there's all these incredible albums that like started as studio recordings of a show before sort of like the main production was known in the world. So we sort of followed in that lineage and got to make an album that because that process unlocked a different sonic world of what we could do if we were just taking the cast on the day off and bringing them into the studio. We made this album over a few years, actually, and we recorded it over a bunch of different cities. We recorded it with sort of the exact musicians and the exact cast that we would want, who maybe we wouldn't be able to get them all into one room to make something. But because we're using the tools of the studio to do so, it unlocked the ability to approach it differently. And I hope when people listen through the album straight top to bottom, because they're going to take your advice, they get to experience sort of the studio craft of being able to sort of take them onto the ride. You're not, I hope when you're listening to this album, you're not just sort of imagining a production in your mind, though that's wonderful. You get to sort of imagine that you're along this journey with our characters, because we have tools, whether it's voiceover, whether it's a growing and expanding orchestra. I mean, that's just to go on a brief tangent. normally when you're recording a cast album, you're taking your orchestra, you're putting them in the studio. That's what you're recording. For this, for some tracks, we have two guitars and some programmed drums. For some tracks, we have five strings and three woodwinds, and it can grow and expand in ways that you just couldn't do in a production because we're not limited by those parameters. So I hope that the goal for this was to really make an album in that lineage of studio recordings that exists on their own. And I'm quite proud of how we were able to use the studio as a collaborator in the process.
Yeah, and it really comes across when you actually sit and listen to the album, because it takes you on sort of a journey, both literally and figuratively, because you are going on a road trip with this family. Talk about the casting for the album, because it's an interesting mix of, you've got theater people like Jeremy Jordan, but you also have recording artists, you have singer-songwriters, you have so what was the impetus to cast it that way? And obviously you had an affinity for some of these, obviously affinity for many of these performers. So talk about what your goal was to put this group of performers together.
Yeah. I mean, it dovetails with what we're saying about sort of like what making a studio album unlocks for you. There's no universe in which we would be able to assemble this cast to do a run anywhere, even on Broadway, because some of these folks are not Broadway performers. They're recording artists and singer-songwriters, as you mentioned. I mean, the short answer to your question is I got to just sort of like fever dream cast the exact people who I would ever want to sing these songs. They're all artists, but actors and singers who I'm just a huge fan of. And I was like, oh, who in my mind would be the ideal Haley? Like, who just truly embodies Haley musically? Oh, it's Sarah Kayes. We're going to, like, let's get Sarah to do this. So that's the short answer. The longer answer is that, similar to, again, whether it's Aida or Jesus Christ Superstar, being able to make a recording frees you up from the constraints of being able to play the role, or whether it's practically, whether it's whether you have no desire to ever do a musical. It's just about who would embody the narrative storytelling musically through the recording process the best. And whoever that was is the people we tried to get. And we were very fortunate that we sort of assembled this. We've been joking that it's like the Avengers of musical theater a little bit, because they do come from these very, very separate worlds. But getting to hear them together on one album, I think, is sort of part of the thrill of this project. You know, you would never normally get to hear Kevin Atwater and Jeremy Jordan singing together. They come from different universes. But I think that it's funny. I don't know that, maybe you do, Donald, like whether on Jesus Christ Superstar or whether on Chess, they blended Broadway actors with the recording artists who were singing those songs. But to me, there's something so exciting about hearing Jeremy sing alongside folks that he wouldn't normally sing with, and vice versa. Getting to sort of live in the intersection of those worlds with our casting sort of mirrors what we're doing sonically with the album.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think in the history of some of the studio cast recordings, I mean, you mentioned Chess. I mean, the original concept recording of Chess was using at least the main four leads were all people who had theater backgrounds. And I know that the original hope was that the main four leads would do the London production, although only one of them was not available. And so Barbara Dixon wasn't available to do Svetlana. So they recast that role. But the other three leads were all the same as the concept recording. But there are some cases, like with Aida, concept recording was all recording artists. I mean, it just depends on what the producers of the album are looking for and what kind of sonic feel they want.
Yeah, what you're trying to accomplish through the voices. Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk about the score, and talk about your musical influences. I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, the score sort of goes on a bit of a journey with our characters. Again, we're following this road trip, and it's one from an immediate loss. The show begins right after Haley's mom has passed away, and it ends with them in Niagara Falls, sort of having found a new conception of this family. And so the score sort of evolves alongside our characters as they go on this trip. So it starts very, very quiet and very intimately. It's acoustically driven. It's really focused on the acoustic guitar and some very light arpeggiated picking things. And it sort of ends at a place of, I would say, almost orchestral indie pop, if that makes sense, as our characters sort of go on this journey. And I was really excited at the idea of making the album sound like the songs that were influencing the score. So it's artists like Bon Iver, Fleet Foxes, Sufjan Stevens, the Canadian band Stars, really sort of capturing an intimacy with the mic that maybe you can't always do on stage, really sort of that whispering in your ear, telling you a story from the beginning. And then obviously it opens up and grows to be sort of a big emotional catharsis, if you will. There's a song toward the end of the album called A Life, which Jeremy Jordan sings, that it contains within it like an entire lifetime of a relationship sort of over the 6-minute journey.
I stand adjacent a fountain in college. Michelle leaves the class and starts heading for home. I tap her shoulder to make something happen. The next thing I know, we're swimming in all of our clothes. We get to talking, she loves conversation. She can go hours with new things to say. I tell her I'd like to be on the force. She asks to take me to dinner and says she insists that she pays. Time goes by and by. Strange how you swim in a fountain and end up with a life. We buy a house in the heart of the suburbs. We spend a few years just circling lines. Michelle always dreams of flying and traveling. I say that I would too. We have plenty of time. We were both so small. Didn't have any money, so we thought, why not Niagara Falls? I was so young, I was so young, I was so young. And we were so alive, so alive, so alive. I work on the force, I move up through the ranks. I make detective in the few years I had. Michelle is elated. She sells a painting and gives me a gift. She says, my new name is Dad. Sam was so very small. Wanted her to start to see the world. So we thought, why not Niagara Falls? Haley was so very small. Building a family, we thought, let's take them to Niagara Falls.
Think of the trips we would take as a kid. Think of the painting that mom chose to give. Look at the waterfalls, look at the rapids. Mom wanted you to remember, move on and forgive. She's gone, 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 gone. It wasn't you at all. Mom must have wanted you to let go and come to Niagara Falls.
We got to attack this a little bit cinematically, right? We have these big sort of like sweeping film gestures. And getting to do that, getting to, again, like grow and expand and also be quite intimate and quite delicate is part of the fun of this album. I'll highlight one more track, which is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is this like, it's sort of a bottle song. It's a self-contained journey along the ride of Deathless. And getting to hear Kevin Atwater do that song in a very, very contained manner and how we produced it and how his vocal is delivered, I think is part of what makes the sonics of the album different and hopefully interesting to folks.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I read the press release when it was sent to me before I actually listened to the album. And they described it in the press release as an emotional indie folk musical. I was like, oh, okay.
What does that mean?
Yeah, where I was like, well, I mean, indie folk musical, I've kind of heard that phrase before, but the adding of the emotional part was sort of like, okay, that's an interesting spin on that. But indie folk genre works so well with musical theater anyway, because indie folk is storytelling, you know, and storytelling is what musical theater is all about. Because as we know, you know, songs in musical theater are supposed to be there because they are supposed to be character driven or plot driven, or, you know, they really should be telling you, they should be moving the story forward. And that's why I think folk music and sometimes country music has when it is used properly, works so well in musical theater.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, besides the sort of like reverence of craft that all those genres sort of have, the focus on storytelling and also the focus on how a lyric has to sort of contain both the beauty and poetry of a lyric, but also it has to do a job, right? It has to meet a character, whether that's in a country song or a musical theater song. There's such natural overlap between those. And for the artists who I mentioned who were influences on this score, you know, they're living in sort of the lineage of American folk music or American country music, but they're in a sort of the modern folk context of like, how do the sonics of the album itself help inform that storytelling? And so you're absolutely right that it's taking its cues from all of those places.
Now that we've pushed the album, and we've got people listening to the album, hopefully. And as I'm going to tell people over and over again, I know you can go to Spotify, you can go to any of the streaming services, and you can sit and you can listen to this album being streamed on all the different places. But streaming does not it puts mere pennies in people's pockets, if that. So you are required to purchase a digital download. At the very least, you have to purchase the digital download, because that's what helps pay for more cast recordings. So
listen to Donald, everybody. Donald has filled with multiple nuggets of wisdom.
I know. I preach this every episode. I swear to God, I know it's the streaming is what it is, and streaming has been the bane of people's existence because it just does not generate the income or the revenues that really the record labels need to produce more of these albums. So I always tell people, I know. It's CD. You may not want to actually purchase a physical CD these days, but you can afford a digital download. So purchase a digital download.
Buy your digital download, and then after you've bought it, you're welcome to stream it multiple times.
Yeah, you can listen to it. But it's okay. It's okay to go on Spotify and sample the album, and you know hear if you are into the music and whatever. But then purchase the digital download. So if somebody has now listened to the album. What are you hoping that, you know, the audience, in this case, a listener, what are they going to take away from the show, you think?
You know, there's obviously a provocative question baked into the premise, right?
Right.
Because when you're following these characters making this decision, it, you know, we ask ourselves, would you take this pill and live forever if you had the choice to do so? And so obviously I'm excited for people to start to ask themselves that question and how it would shape their relationship and their lives. And beyond that, to then to sort of bring our awareness, you know, we, again, we all, this is the core of what it means to be alive, is to, an understanding that our time is limited. But I think that we don't talk about it that often on a day-to-day basis, right? We're not all, because we have to function and we get caught up in our routines and our lives. And so alongside the Sterling family, alongside our characters, if people start having conversations about, you know, what does it mean to die? And what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to have a limited time on this planet? You know, I get excited, to some of my friends' dismay. These are the kind of questions that I like to talk about over dinner and pick people's brains about, because that's part of what it means to be here. Right. So I hope that as folks go on the musical journey, they start to, you know, have these conversations with each other and see how it shapes their understanding of what it means to be here.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, because I personally had what it was called the mortality moment. And it is that moment. And it happens to, I think, almost everybody. It just happens at different people, at different times in your life, for different people, different ages. It happened for me in my 30s. And I remember expressing that to my boss, who was a woman who was older than me. She's since passed on. She actually passed away this year. But I mentioned it to her, and it was one of those situations where I woke up in the middle of the night and with this absolute horrified realization that I was going to die. It just had never hit me that, oh my God, I'm going to die at some point. And it changes your entire perspective of your life. And going forward, from that moment forward, I have lived my life totally differently. In terms of what I do and the people that I allow into my life and the people I have excluded from my life, who are, you know, negative and that kind of stuff, I just don't have time for that, because I kind of look at the fact that at some point I am going to die, and I want to make the most of what time I have left, which I don't know when it's going to be, but I want to make sure that I'm doing good things, and I increased the amount of charities I give to, and I, all these wonderful things. I'm not like leaving a legacy or anything, but I want to do the right things, and I want to enjoy my life, and I want to surround myself with positive, happy people who are supportive and care about each other. And it's sort of like your musical sort of like forcing that question on people, which I really like.
Encouraging.
You know, it brings up the topic.
On a musical theater show. And isn't that beautiful that we're having that level of existential conversation in this context?
I remember I would bring it up to friends that were my friends who were the same age, and it was a little young. My boss even said that. She said, you're a little young to be having that mortality moment, because I was only in my early 30s. She said, it usually happens much later for most people. But I would bring it up to my friends, and they'd be like, what are we talking about this for? This is horrible. It's so negative. And I'd be like, I don't know. To me, it was a positive thing, because it was positive because it made me rethink my life and made me rethink, do positive things.
Well, you know, you've arrived at sort of the core of you've sort of circled around to help me answer your question, because that's the core of this show, right? Obviously, death is in the title, and death is a be downer of a subject, but how death informs life, how that facilitates the beautiful things that you're describing, whether it's just with your loved ones, whether it's how you spend your professional time, that's at the core of this show, that's at the mm-hmm. core of this album. And I'm so grateful that we get to have a conversation about it in the context of musical theater. Like that's the whole
exactly. And you know, I it's horrible, because there's so many times where you're like, I won't even go to like a movie that I know I'm not going to enjoy, or I won't go see a show that I know I'm not going to enjoy, because I'm like, I don't want to waste.
Life's too short.
I don't want to waste. Life's too short. I always say that all the time. Life's too short. I don't want to waste my time going to a movie I know I'm not going to like.
Yeah, listen, you're onto something. It's true. It's
silly, but it's true. Exactly.
There's an amazing book that you would love, Donald, but maybe your listeners would be interested in too, called The Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. And obviously, again, a sort of a heavy sounding title, but he was an existential psychologist. The book won the Pulitzer, and it's about just what we're talking about, right? It's about how an awareness of death informs what it means to construct our lives. And it was a hugely important book, both in my life and to the writing of this show. And it might be of interest.
Okay. I made a note of it. I will definitely look it up. So what is next for Deathless? I did see that earlier this month, I believe, that Music Theater International acquired the licensing rights for the show, although there is a restriction of no new productions at this point, which I hopefully foretells that there might be a production coming up that we're kind of restricting productions. But so what is the future for the show at this point?
You've done some great sleuthing, Donald.
Of course. I have been in the production end of musical theater for so long. As soon as I saw MTI got the licensing rights, I was like, oh, I'm going to go check that out. And I looked and immediately saw it's restricted. It's like, okay, wait. They got the right, but they're like, but you can put yourself on the mailing list so that we can notify you when it's available. I'm like, oh, okay.
Drive their mailing list, Donald. I'm just a pawn in their mailing list scheme.
So what are your hopes for the future of the show?
Well, I will say, again, it exists as its own artifact. Like, much like the Hadestown album, folks can go listen to the album and have a contained journey of the show. Beyond that, you're right. MTI will be licensing it, even though the licenses are current, so that folks all around the country and all around the world can do productions of it, whether it's at a school, whether it's at your community theater, whether it's at your local professional theater. You know, I fell in love with musicals, like most people, I think, from doing them through the opportunity afforded to you as a person. So I'm really excited to be partnering with MTI. Their catalog, you know, means so much to the shows that shape my life. Beyond that, I think what you're sleuthing around is there'll be another sort of main production of Deathless. And for that, there's nothing I have to share at this moment, but I'm definitely excited for at the thought of there being another major production of Chin.
Okay, well, that's enough. So, and where can listeners find you online so that they can follow you and they can follow the show? Because I know you have plenty of other things that you have been working on. So where can they find you?
I'm at Zach Zadik. Well, I said my own name strangely. I'm at Zach Zadik on all things, on Instagram, on TikTok. My site is ZachZadik.com. So shoot me a follow there. I'd love to keep in touch with your listeners because they, based on the things that you've been talking about on this show, they're clearly some of the most educated listeners around. So I'm happy and excited to connect with them.
Terrific. Well, Zach, I am thrilled that you took the time to come and chat. And I encourage people to check out Deathless, the studio cast recording. It's on Ghostlight Records. And again, I'm going to beat this into you again. Purchase a digital download. Do we know if we're getting physical? Are we getting physical CDs? Or
well, it depends on how many digital downloads we sell. So, okay. So if you want a nice vinyl, definitely take Donald's advice.
Yes, if you want vinyl or a physical CD, you got to purchase a digital download. So get out there and purchase a digital download, and keep an eye out for productions or a production of Deathless, hopefully soon. Again, thank you, Zach. It's been a pleasure.
It's been an honor, Donald. Thanks for having me.
Daddy's standing by the windowsill. All is calm, all is still as the ground turns to white. Plasticware for my last meal at home. I must have been high, 'cause the styrofoam reminds me of the snow. Mom says there's things to talk about, that on Monday night Dad is moving out, and they thought I should know. Dad tells me things are still alright. He says I can't love someone forever. I don't know what I would do. I can't love someone forever except for you. Forever's too long except for you. No class because a doctor came. I helped my dad unpack his things and hang them on the wall. Gives him a kiss goodbye. I don't want her to see, so I rub my eye as a tear starts to fall. She drives me home, we pretend it's all the same. And when I notice different pictures in the frames, she says I can't love someone forever. I don't know what I would do. I can't love someone forever except for you. Forever's too long except for you. When life gets fucked up, he'll just run out the door. And he says, I will love you forever, no matter what you do. But when you live forever, if that is true, who knows if that is true? 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 Who knows what we will do?